Hashtag no music, no intro. We're back, guys. I'm super stoked for this episode. It's one we've been wanting to record for a while. It's finally happening. We have Doctor. Look how fancy.
Oh, I feel so fancy right now. We are now.
Dr. Lindsay Mitchell joining us, a sports psychologist of the Pave Group. This, she has her own business. Like, she is a self-made woman. Shout out to a dude who I'm gonna quickly make a quick segue. Shout out, this is a personal thing. I'm gonna make a shout out to Ryan Nordoff. He's a huge fan of the podcast. He's a supporter of Ryan and I doing the show. He's linked us to some amazing people in the therapeutic counseling world. And earlier today or yesterday, when I kind of made a quick tweet about, you know, personal things going on in my life, my mom being diagnosed with ALS, you know, he sends me a DM. He's like, bro, like, my wife works for the ALS Society of Texas. And it just goes to show, in that regardless of how connected or not connected Ryan and I are to the Saints anymore, something that I'm always thankful for is the community we have in terms of Saints Twitter. It's a very amazing group of people. The amount of like love and support that people were sending me yesterday in my mentions and the DMs I got.
I love that. I love that community.
It was so much, you know, and I wasn't expecting it. So this is a personal shout out to Ryan. Thank you so much, man, for everything that you've done.
He was a good dude in college, and he's still a good dude. So
absolutely. Yeah. So let's fucking get into it.
I love it.
Dr. Mitchell, what the fuck is the paper? Can you
hell do you do on a day-to-day basis, lady?
Let's go.
I mean, very, very briefly. So I'm a clinical psychologist by trade. I did suicide prevention in the military up in Washington, D.C. For the first part of my career.
God bless you.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Talk about a community and beautiful people and beautiful stories. And so I love the psychology behind our military men and women. They're action oriented, right? Look, I got this problem. I'm dealing with this thing and I need help. And that's the kind of therapy that I really love doing. Unfortunately, it is a tough gig and I kind of got burnt out really quickly. I still work with veterans, just not full time. So I was kind of revamping and rethinking what I wanted to do. And athletes are a lot like kind of our military veterans. They're action oriented. They want to get their mind right. I love to be around people that want to compete at an elite level, be that, you know, business people or, you know, athletes, but that athletic mindset, you know, really, like, I really connect with that. So I thought, all right, I'm going to shift gears. After getting my PhD, I said I would never go back to school. I was a big fat liar. And I went back and got my master's in sports psychology. I was the world's worst student because I said, C's get degrees. Let's wrap this bad boy up.
Let's go.
Let's do it. And then I moved back to Texas. I got injured and my dad said, well, while you're sitting around doing rehab, why don't you try to open your own practice? And I dove right in and had two clients and fell in love with the man that absolutely supports me 100%. And so now I work with, so I do about 30%. That's all mental health. So 30% of just the good old military, you know, mental health world. And then I have about 70% of athletes. So we're just helping people function at their very best and whatever means necessary. So I decided I didn't want my name on my practice. So I came up with Pave Group, Pave Your Way to Success. And that's where I'm at. So it's fun to be here.
Oh, that's awesome. Lindsay, you said you, you know, you did your master's in sports psychology. What does something like that entail that's different from your typical psychology master's?
Yeah, so the biggest difference I would say is kind of the mind-body connection that sports psychology really looks like. So we do a lot of like kinesiology classes, anatomy and physiology. So we're really looking at how our minds and bodies are connected. So whereas your clinical psychology is going to do mainly just, you know, your neuropathways and kind of just the mind. So the sports piece, because we're really trying to figure out how can I communicate with my body, or more importantly, how can I get my mind out of the way so my body can do what it needs to do? So that's the biggest difference, is they add that physical component. So we're really looking at that beautiful marriage between the mind and the body.
Oh, so interesting. It's so interesting. So I have my bachelor's in psychology.
Nice.
Yeah. And practice, you know, I'm a social worker. I work with children. And I obviously understand like the psychology world and what have you. What's so interesting is how sports psychology, regular psychology, clinical psychology are like kissing cousins, but also like drastically different in terms of the scope of everything. But I don't, so I want to preface this by saying, or asking, are you a friend of Ted Lasso?
Do you watch Ted Lasso? Yes, I wouldn't, I thought you said a friend. I wouldn't know that he knows who I am, but I know who he is. So.
So the first episode of season two kind of, I don't know if you've seen it, but basically dealt with a player having something happen during a soccer game, and then he just got like the yips, essentially.
Oh, so wow.
So they brought in kind of like a sports psychologist to kind of help him through that. And it immediately made me think of you. And so all that long-windedness to just say, what are some of the techniques that you do in terms of helping athletes get to their athletic peak?
Absolutely. Well, and I think one of the biggest things, I don't know that this is overly popular in sports psychology, but I'm a big believer of it. So I figure you're going to give me a platform, I might as well talk about it. And it's because of the clinical world too. I also believe that we're athletes, and I played collegiate softball. So I understand, you know, our bodies are our tools, and we get paid to play sports that we love, and we really want to be able to perform at that elite level. That being said, I think you got to treat the human as well, especially looking at our youth. We're looking at our collegiate athletes that, you know, they need to be happy with themselves. I'm a big believer that when we feel good about ourselves, we have a good support system, we really understand what's going on in our life, when we have a voice in our life, we then become, you know, beautiful athletes, and our minds are clear, or we get really in touch with ourselves, and so we're able to put our crap down to then go perform. So I think a lot of times sports psychologists can dive right in and be like, all right, we're gonna do some visualization, we're gonna do some breathing, we're gonna talk about, you know, how your you know, body is moving and what key signals we're sending to it. And I start way back at the beginning, like, tell me who you are, you know, what are you trying to accomplish, all the pressure, you know, here are a lot of college athletes, I'm trying to provide for my family, I'm trying to go pro so that I can help, you know, help with this and that. So I do think it's a beautiful marriage of both the clinical piece, because you've got to be a good human, and you have to create an incredible sense of awareness to know, you know, we're seeing that so much. I mean, we saw it in the Olympics with Simone, right? Like, I got to put my stuff down. And when I can't, you know, I need to take a step back and figure out what's happening in my life so that I can perform. So I say that before we kind of dive into traditionally what people think of sports psychology is, you know, athletes are humans too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, kind of, you know, switching to kind of football, one of the things you kind of hear from coaches and GMs all the time, that, you know, during the draft, during the uptick to the draft, when they're scouting players and trying to find, looking at college players as prospects, see who to draft, who to bring in, you know, basically what's become the norm is, it used to be like all about what the tape shows, what they did on the field. Mm-hmm. But now it's like majority off the field stuff, character.
Yep.
You know, mental health, baggage from family.
I tell my parents that. I was like, if we've got a college coach coming to watch your kid, they're watching you just as much as they're watching, you know, your kid too, right? No, I mean, we don't need a parent on the phone. College coaches don't want to deal with like crazy dad, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And even, you know, you hear scouts talk about how they like to go to the college during like practice to watch the players, to see how teammates interact with them, to see how they interact with coaches and stuff like that. And one thing, like me and Adam always talk about, is like, why aren't more professional teams hiring sports psychologists? Like,
that is such a great question.
It's like these coaches.
It's so funny because Ryan knows it pisses me off so much because of my career. And it's like there's these billion-dollar sports organizations, and yet you have coaches that are 40 to like 50 to 60 year old, mostly white men, and you're trying to ask them to like do something that's not in their profession, right? Like they coach, that's what they're good at. Right. And so let's talk about the Tennessee Titans, right? We're talking about this offline. Is there a Isaiah Wilson
I was gonna say, man, if there was a Tennessee Titans sports psychologist position, I would be pay group buy, sign me up, let's go. Although I'd be so emotionally connected, I'd be like, I can't even talk to you right now. You suck on Sunday. Get out of my office.
Like that's a perfect example. Like the Titans spent a first round pick on this player, and probably like one of the worst NFL first round busts in a very long time.
Yeah.
Because he just didn't want to play football. And that's fine. Like
right. But how did somebody not catch that so far ahead of that? Because one of the biggest things, and Adam, I'm sure you get this in your job. Oh, well, you know, I took a Psych 101 class, you know, I help people, I'm a good listener. And I'm like, it's so much more than that. So where I think the psychology world and the sports psychology world, you'll see this a lot in the golf arena. A lot of golf swing coaches think that they can help with the mental side, right? Like, oh, well, I can help them with course management. Oh, I can help with focus. No, you're a swing coach, right? You know, football, like you said earlier, you're the coach. So I think some of that is, it's a little ego, because I think everyone thinks that they can do it, and it's easy, or it feels like anybody can do it. But also it's just about realizing, again, the complexity of the person. I was in an office when I was getting trained for sports psychology, and I was brand new. It was like my second day, and I do have an inability to keep my mouth shut. So I'll say that before we keep going. And so I'm sitting there, I'm just listening and observing a guy, linebacker, very, very well paid, just got transferred to a team, huge money, he's playing great. He's sitting in this room for white coaches, and I'm just taking notes, and his wife was pissed because he said that he thought he was going to be with said team for X amount of time. They just had a baby, just built a house. And so wife said, look, I'm staying put, you go play football. And he was playing bad. And they're all, you know, talking about, you got to beef up, you got to do this. I'm like, he's playing great. I was like, his problem is because his family's not right. Right. Like he's not functioning because he can't figure out where to put his stuff down and connect with his wife and try to make it work. And they looked at me like I had eight heads, which was fine. But that's the part, right? And when I say that we're humans, and we've got to really figure out how to merge the two, and everybody play nice in the sandbox. So that's my soapbox. I promise it won't happen again. That's a lie. That's a huge lie.
I guess our question is, if teams had sports psychology, like let's say an NFL team, right? Leading up to the draft, like Ryan was talking about, if each NFL team had a sports psychologist, and then if someone in the Saints organization is listening to this episode, because we know sometimes that people do listen to our episodes, like just pass this along to Sean. But if each NFL team had a sports psychologist, like how much could they gain in terms of during the draft process with prospects, getting to know how prospects, what makes them tick, how could that transform how they evaluate players?
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's different. It's also different, you know, you're going to see it a little bit more in baseball. They've got some sports psychologists that are traveling to kind of the minor leagues to do a little bit of that. But as far as football, again, I think you just see the nuances that, you know, you're not going to see in the PT, you're not going to see in the combine, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to see it in that athletic way. Also, huge nonverbals. So you could have a guy that's crushing it, and you look, I mean, a big thing in football is communication between your teammates, right? Like, you've got guys that are so incredibly talented, and if we've got issues in the locker room, those are going to come out to play. You know, if you're a great player, but you don't play well in the sandbox, I don't know that I want you on my squad. But that's also a difference of opinion too. I mean, there are some coaches that, like, oh, Cam Newton's talented, or was talented. You know, let's
shots at Cam on the line.
No. But you know, again, you know, you see Belichick's like, I can take talent and I can create it and we can make it work. And then you have other coaches that are like, team chemistry, I want the locker room to be good, I need a good leader. So I think where sports psychology is, where we benefit, is I can just provide you information. Like, hey, I talked to this guy, good family dude, he's going to lead by example. You know, this is kind of what I saw. And then it's really up to how he fits in the game plan. So it's no different than your physical talent and your physical ability. I just think it's a layer that is often overlooked. So some coaches might say, hey, I like kind of the, you know, the badass, the attitude, the ego. I like that. We need some swag, like, in our locker room. Like, let's do it. So some of that's just
that sounds like Ryan. Ryan loves adding thugs to his team.
Let's go.
It's like, oh, you have a record? Oh yeah.
Put him on the squad. He knows how to do it. Let's do it. But again, I think, you know, you're looking at you know, what you're looking for the team, what this person, you know, and a lot of times you'll see that in the collegiate level, just the amount of pressure these kids are under. So a lot of the work that I do with the collegiate level is really creating, like I said, that awareness of, okay, you got a lot of shit going on. I can appreciate that, but we also have work to do on the field. So let's talk about it. So I kind of went into sports psychology thinking I was going to talk sports all the time, right? I was like, oh, this job's going to be so great. But 70% of my time is really talking about life stuff, or, you know, issues with other players or coaches or stress or money, or, hey, doc, I can't clear my head. My girl, like, broke up with me. Like, I don't know what to do. And so you're really, that was a big eye opening. I've now been doing this for 6 years. God, I'm old. And I really, it was eye opening for me in my first couple years, and I'm like, man, yeah, I'm talking sports, and obviously it all comes down to performance, but the performance techniques are really only about 30% of the job.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the thing is, you know, just us as, you know, let's say Americans, just humans, we have a tough time dealing with mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Go down a notch, men. We have a really tough time dealing with health. Go down another notch,
black men.
We have a really, really, like, it is. It's
y'all
almost
don't
want to, like,
get in touch. Y'all don't want to get in touch with your feelings. Come on now.
I do, but I'm just saying, you know.
Right.
Culturally, it's been, you know, it's just one of those taboo things. You just don't talk about it. You tough it out. You know, don't worry about it. You tough it out. Keep pushing.
Well, and like, and, you look at athletes, military. I mean, again, that same thing, weakness, that weakness word, you know, I'm having a moment. It's that weak word, and really redefining that and like, okay, let's take a step back. You know, got a lot of kind of African-American athletes that are coming out, which I think is great, being like, hey, you know, we got to be able to talk about it. Mental health trends up and down, but we're seeing a lot of, you know, a lot of coaches, players that are starting to talk about it, which then trickles down, you know, and hopefully we can start. Right now we're reacting to mental health and athletics. And what I love is to get more proactive. And that starts with the youth sports. We don't need kids playing, you know, this diehard competitive sport when they're 2.5. So I think, you know, we're really looking at a cultural change in the world of athletics, but giving you know, strong. So in my profession, some athletes don't claim to work with me, which is fine. You know, I whenever I go out to the field or go out to practice or, and that's the other thing with men and athletes, I'll go out and I'll play catch, you know, they might be throwing the football and I'm just standing right next to them just talking. So it's not that, which is what I love. It's not that in the office, sit on my couch and like, tell me your hopes and dreams. You know, it's hey, be you, talk to your teammates, like talk to me, you know, which I love, really getting out there, especially men in general, that face-to-face kind of direct eye contact. They do a lot better opening up when it's side to side and when they're involved in some sort of action. So I think, but
that's so funny because it's very similar to if I'm talking to like a child in my caseload, let's say they've been coached right by their parents to not tell me something. So something that I try to do is kind of preoccupy their minds. And so like, we'll play like a game and like, we're talking about like all everything in the world, blah, 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 boom, boom. And then like, right when the flow's going, then I'll just hit them like, oh, boom. So tell me who's such and such. Like,
You'll get that nugget, right? That's all you're looking for.
Boom. Exactly. So that's so interesting.
So if anytime I can get out there, and then just kind of get that action. And then, like I said, then there's that technique that we're talking about. Like our minds are very complicated in some ways and very simple in other ways. So when we look, we talk about negative self-talk versus positive self-talk, which really what we're trying to do is be really aware of the messages that we're telling our body. So, you know, don't overthrow it. All my brain heard was overthrow instead of hit my target, hit the chest, hit, you know. So we'll mix in, you know, the technique part of it, but it all starts with, again, it's that connection. You got to trust me. It takes me a long time. Like, I've got guys that are like, coach said I had to talk to you. I'm like, oh, this is gonna be so much fun. Come on in, you're gonna love it. And so you have to kind of let people buy into the process. So I think that's a big part of it too, is the techniques again will come as that trust is developed. But a lot of people, for the first probably 3 years, I don't think I had any athletes that really claimed that they worked with me. And when I was up at the USAM, all three athletes, they're like, oh, this is my head doctor, this is the lady that keeps my mind right, like, oh, this is doc, like, she's in charge of my brain. I mean, own the crap out of it, which is, you can see that stigma is starting to get removed a little bit.
That's great.
It is.
So, okay, you know, you sit and you work with an athlete for a while. Mm-hmm. The treatment, what does that look like? Is it, you know, is it medication? Is it certain tools and tricks that you give them to kind of work through it? How does that work?
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's super customized. I think you can't have a cookie cutter approach, just like, you know, all people are different. I think all athletes are different. But some of the main things is if we've got any sort of, you know, again, that clinical piece, if we're struggling with anxiety or depression, we always look at medication, support system, you know, your day-to-day, how are you taking care of yourself? So I always start out basic, like at the basic level, how are we functioning? And then we kind of go up from there. So I'll work with some athletes for, you know, their whole career. A lot of it can be just maintenance, like, hey, I just need to kind of talk through the game. This is what I saw. This is what I was disappointed in myself. So the biggest thing when I first start working with someone is awareness. We've got to know when most athletes, when I first work with them, will be like, well, what went well? I don't know. It just went well. Like, I threw the ball good. I felt good. My body felt good. Okay. But why? Right. Cause I think we spend a lot of time trying to fix things, but we don't spend that much time when it's going well. Why is it going well? Because then we can repeat that behavior. We can repeat preparation. We can repeat, you know, game day. Like, were you pumped? Were you communicating? Like, what messages were you telling yourself? Like, what was going well so that we can then recreate it, as opposed to what was broken that we're trying to fix? So always starting from that mindset, I think, gives you an advantage. Because And so we have to create the awareness, and then we have to focus on what's going well. So we're recreating it. Then we work on, okay, what are a couple of things that need some improvement? So that's kind of how I see it. I don't know if that makes sense to y'all. Oh, did I lose you?
Oh, sorry. I was muted.
No, you're like, Lindsay, that makes no sense. I'm out. Goodbye. Podcast over. I was like, okay, apparently that was not good.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
Cardinal Zoom mistake of just being muted. And we're so classy here that we're not going to even edit it out. We just like our listeners to be along for the experience.
Yeah, I had a small panic moment. I was like, all right, good to know where we're at. Good to know we're reviving. I appreciate it.
You're like, okay, so we weren't doing good.
Okay, all right. So regroup, shot of tequila, get back on board. All right.
So something that goes hand in hand in your field is the day and age that we live in with social media.
Mm-hmm.
It's so drastically different back in the day.
Different, yeah.
When it's like the only people that would criticize you were like the local radio talk show host and like that's then like maybe like fans, but like it's so drastic.
I think you could drown that out if you really wanted to. Yeah. But I think that's a lot harder to do now.
It's so hard to do. And the perfect example, you know, that I think about as a Saints fan is what happened to Marcus Williams after he missed a tackle, Minnesota Miracle. And even seeing other Saints fans, like just the vitriol that they had. Also, it's kind of, I had to block people because they were going in his mentions just being just, and that's when I get just like everything, like why are we doing this over fucking sports? But that's a conversation, we'll get into that.
He was 21 years old, a 21 year old.
That's crazy, Ryan.
Everyone's telling you are garbage.
Right.
You are garbage. Right. And you had a good year. Like, this was someone.
He had an excellent rookie season.
Oh, I was going to say, and now you're trying to. So basically, the message that we're sending is you cannot make a mistake.
Mm.
Right? Like, because like you said, great season, great athlete, great kid, right? And we're saying, hey, but don't fuck up one time or we don't have your back anymore. And I think that's a hard message to receive. From your own community.
Yeah.
And I think that perfection, or you'll also see like a lot, especially in football, you'll have a guy who plays poorly on Sunday, takes his kids to school on Monday, and they're like booing their kid, you know, his kids, right? And I'm like, all right, let's like settle down at the end of the day. Like I said, I'm in a bad mood when the Titans lose, but I'm not going to like throw stuff at somebody. So I think that's the beauty of sports. And what I love about it is that camaraderie and that community. But I think being really careful to check and balance, like at the end of the day, let's get some perspective just as people. And social media is tough because it feeds off of it, right? I mean, one person kind of throws something out there, whereas before that's locker room talk, or you know, maybe on a broadcast somebody says something and it kind of dies there. The social media, it just gets fuel and it just keeps growing. And then like at the end of the day, we've lost perspective. He dropped a pass and he had a great season, right? He, you know, he had a bad game, or, you know, he said something, you know, in the dugout that he probably shouldn't have said. And now that's all he's known for. And so I think we have this perfection culture, especially when it comes to our athletes, and it's damaging to their mental health. I firmly believe that.
Yes.
So I'm just glad. So, I mean, and the social media part, like I said, I think it's great in so many ways. Messages to people. You can connect with people. You can encourage them. I mean, Adam, you were even saying getting all the mentions when you put stuff out there. So I think, again, we have to take responsibility for, I love athletes. I think they're amazing human beings, but yet they're human beings.
Yeah. Now, I'm still struggling to figure out is social media a net positive for the human race? I just don't know. I can't answer.
You know what? I go back and forth. I've seen so much beauty and then you see so much pain. And I go back and forth with that myself. Honestly, I really do. It's something I struggle with from a mental health perspective, or you put it in the wrong hands. But you know, I don't know. I could, you know, talk myself both ways.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's man. That's such a interesting interesting question.
Like, but yeah, I think again, we've put athletes in some ways on a pedestal. They deserve and they earn. I mean, like I said, they are great, but on the other hand, they're human beings. They're going to make mistakes. We're going to lose games. We're going to have bad things happen. And so again, that perfectionism culture. And I do see guys really take that on. Like, I know one of you was talking about just men not wanting to open up, or African-American men, and you're saying like, you're getting this message that I've got to be perfect in every sense of the word. And now you're telling me I'm supposed to talk to this chick about what I'm bad at or what I'm struggling with. Like, that's that mixed messaging.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why as an independent consultant, so you'll see that a lot in the military, I actually reach more military people, and I actually think I do better work now that I don't directly work for the military system, because you are still in the system. So again, you'll see a lot of athletes. So teams might not have sports psychologists, but like Russell Wilson has his own separate sports psychologist that's not connected at all to his team. And a lot of times they do that for that confidentiality. Hey, look, I need to go talk to somebody and I know that it's going to stay in house. So we'll see a lot of that too, because these franchises demand that they're supposed to be perfect and effortless and no fear and, you know, tough. And then you're saying, okay, but now you can show weakness to her in this room, but only in this way and only to this person and not when anyone's looking. So which I think is tough. Yeah,
it is. It's extremely tough. It's extremely tough to, I think that you brought up a great point about the independent, being an independent contractor and not being affiliated with the team or military. Like that's a great point that I didn't really even consider. Like
it just gives you the freedom. Like if I want to say, well, I think your coach is kind of an asshole, right? Like he's not signing my check at the end of the day. Right. And I do think it allows you to see them as humans, and then we see them as athletes. And then I can say, all right, let me go talk to other people. It gives you a little bit. I've always loved it because it does give you the ability, I think, to be more impactful. But that also takes a lot of responsibility on athletes to have to then reach out for that help. Because when you're affiliated with the team, sometimes you'll have required meetings, right? Like you have to go see Lindsay every week. Whereas, so that's the other side of it, is sometimes people don't reach out for help. You know, when they need it or they're struggling and the other thing with sports psychology versus the clinical world, clinical people will come in and they know it's a journey and a process. I'll get guys that'll call me on like Saturday and be like, all right, doc, my game tomorrow, like, what the hell do I do? And I'm like, okay, first of all, I would charge you a hell of a lot more if it only took one session and one magic word to like get your mind right. And then I would never see you again. So that's the other part too, is we are training our minds to connect with our bodies. We're trying to change the way we think, to change the way we perform. And that does take time. And so that's a little tricky too in the sports psychology world, because you are dealing with people that put their head down and they get action really quickly. And they like, they'll rehab, they're ready to go. They want to get back out there. And the psychology with the sports aspect, you are retraining the way you think. And when we ask our brains to make that big adjustment, it takes some time. And sometimes, you know, they'll catch you mid-season. And I'm like, all right, like there are definitely things that you can do in the moment to, you know, very simple things like, okay, we got to change the messages that you're telling yourself. You've got to prepare. I tell athletes to do a brain dump the night before. So if it's a voice message or a note or however you want to get it out, every single thing that's bothering you, everything that's on your mind, every worry or fear that you have, like dump it out so that when you walk on that field, you're as clear as you can be. So like that's an example of something that doesn't take time, that just takes some effort to do it. But you know, visualization, everyone talks about that, very hard skill, lots of effort that it takes you to really utilize it in a way that's going to be beneficial. So there's also a little bit of a dichotomy there of, I can give you some tips and tricks to like ease some things that are happening, but it's also a long-term process. And I think it has to be a part of your training as well. So.
I wanted to ask
you. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to ask you, especially dealing with money, you know, obviously that's hard just in general as a human being.
Right.
Doing the money. Then you're talking about like big wealth. I mean, right. Life-changing
money,
generational wealth.
Right. Just
snap of a finger, it's like happening. I mean, how do you even deal with that? You're talking about family, yep. family wanting to help. You want to help your family, but you also have to think about how to take care of your finances. You're working in a career that could end literally in practice.
Yep.
One snap and you could land on you just take a step back wrong and your career is over. Right. I mean.
Well, and you've got money and then you've got stupid money, right? So you've got a lot of guys in the league that are making, $3 million, right? And so yeah. I'm thinking, oh, $3 million, right? But you got, mm-hmm. Your agent, your trainer, your this, your that, your house, your family. Like that's also money that you have to manage well and be careful. And your career, like you said, might last 2 years, right? And you might be 24. Well, if you made $6 million and you're 24, that's not going to go as far as we would like it to go either. So,
right.
I think that's, again, helping people identify kind of who they are. You'll see a lot of families that are super involved. You got to give money to so-and-so. Oh, you got to do this. That's a whole nother layer of stress. And so I think as a culture, when we talk about, we were talking about earlier about that perfection culture, the pressure, it's like, oh, you get to play football for a living. It's so awesome. Well, yes and no, right? My body's beaten up. My mind's beaten up. And now I'm taking on this responsibility of caring for a family. It's a lot to take on. So I think it's a place that a lot of people want to be. But there's a lot of mental grind that comes with managing kind of all of those pressures. And like you said, I step wrong and I'm out.
Right. And then there's just the stress of, people looking at you with dollar signs in their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Even family where maybe you just want to go see your cousin and say, hey, what's going on, cuz? And just talk shit. But,
You're not that cousin anymore. You're the pro player.
You're the pro player. You're like, but what are you bringing to the table? You're just like, right. Are you going to bring some money? Are we going to the strip club? Are we going, it's
right.
It's like you can't even just relax and just be the cool cousin that we always were. It's like,
that's such a good point. It's an identity thing. It's a who can I trust? When can I be myself? What is myself? What does my real self even mean? I mean, that's kind of what I mean. As much as I talk sports performance, such a big part of it is just like all that crap.
Yeah. Oh man. I can't imagine.
Yeah, that's a completely different other aspect to it. We can honestly have a whole episode on this, but I gotta jump into it. So this is a topic and an idea I have thought about for years. We were talking about it before we started recording. And like I told you, Dr. Mitchell, if I go back to school and if I go get my doctorate, I truly want to do my dissertation on fans being emotionally attached to a sports team and how it's almost exactly similar like being in an abusive relationship. I've seen it so much like this. There's a whole cycle to it, right? Like right now it's the off season, it's training camp, right? To me, this is the after, last season didn't end that well,
it's all this hope, it's all this newness.
Yeah, it's like, it's
bright,
like
shiny.
It's like, this is the babe.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do better. I'm gonna do better. Like I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Here's the flowers. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You get the draft. You got the new players.
I'll buy the jersey. I'm back in. I got the jersey.
I changed.
Yeah.
I changed. You see what I'm trying? I'm changed.
Baby, I'm sorry. I'm a new man.
And it's so wild because. Like, if you really think about it, their fans, especially men, like, we are notorious for this, that are more loyal to their sports team than they are, their actual, spouses and girlfriends. Ask a guy, bro, how about you just change your sports team? Just, change your team.
And they're what? I could never.
But then you ask them, hey, are you in, Are you and Michelle good?
Isn't that crazy? Well, and also too, you think there are people that are in their, let's say, 50s that have been diehard Saints fans since they were in the womb, right? Like their dad, it's a family thing. Like you didn't have a choice. Like you're just, and so it's like sometimes a sports team, people have been committed to that more than anything that they've ever committed to. A partner, a job, a house. I mean, you think about it. If you've been a religion, I mean, all of that. So in some ways, it becomes a part of you. By the way, if you go back to school and you write that dissertation, I'm all in because I think it's fascinating as hell. And more people would read that than read mine. So I'd be in on that. But it's true. I mean, you've got this commitment. Like you said, I mean, it's this commitment to the game. And as much as we think we do, we have zero control over something that has such an enormous power over our psyche.
Nobody.
Nobody cares that you wore the same jersey and you didn't wash it. Nobody cares. This has no effect on it.
Yeah, nobody's hearing you scream through the TV that you want them to, you know, blitz the quarterback, right? Like, no one hears that.
The only maybe small, like, you know, change that we have as fans is going to a game in person, the Superdome or whatever, and like creating some type of like home
crowd
field
noise
advantage
or something. Yeah,
but that's it. And even then, that means nothing.
Well, and you think about it too, and so something that literally can put people. I went to school at University of Kentucky, and when the basketball team loses, the whole Lexington, Kentucky is in a depression for like a long time. And you're thinking, for something that has such a profound impact on your life, there is nothing else in our life that we would let impact us that way that we had so little control over.
Exactly. Oh, that's so true. Whoa.
And by the way, it's stupid, and I'm listening to myself speak, and I'm like, you need to listen to your own shit because you need to get over it. I mean, even the people I work with, my athletes, I mean, obviously I'm invested in, I follow them, I want them to do well, I look at their faces, but even then, I mean, you can only can control that so much, and you're so invested in it.
Let's go back. What was it? 2 years? Was it the Titans and the Chiefs and the AFC Championship?
That would be us.
Everything was going like so rosy.
We were rolling. I was rolling. Rolling.
And then one Mahomes epic scramble.
I hate that guy.
It up right now, like you're triggered.
I know you are triggering me right now on a Friday night. I do not need this shit. Look what you're doing to me. but it's so true. I mean, I literally am like, my Apple Watch that game told me to sit down. It was like, you need to calm down. You're getting like exerted. And that's the thing. Amazing. I mean, it goes back to this love for it, but circling back to what we talked about earlier, that's why people treat people like shit that drop passes. So as great as it is, and as much as I love that community, and I love, you know, I think sports just brings people together, we got to check it.
I
need to check it.
We got to check it.
It's crazy. And I would love to understand the physiological response to that. Like us watching a football game, I'm sitting at home watching on my TV.
Oh, yeah.
Competitions.
Physical response to watching it.
And I'm not doing anything, but yet I feel all the emotions. I feel like I'm a part of it. I'm fully invested. And you really do. Like my Apple Watch, hand to God, was like, sit down.
Sit down. Like you're
like, so not, she listens to some episodes. So speaking of the Chiefs, that same year, my girlfriend is a 49ers fan, right?
Okay.
Played the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. She's kind of emotionally detached herself from the Niners.
She has a healthy attachment, let's put it that way.
Yeah, she does, for sure. And she came to that realization before Ryan and I came to our realization of the Saints. But even that game, she didn't watch it. It was on, but she was like at a party where it was on. And same thing. Apple Watch was telling her, like, just knowing like the score and knowing that the Niners were like blowing the lead, it was something that was just, it's just wild. The grasp.
Well, like I said, it's this connection. And like I said, one of the things I can go back, I've been a fan of the Tennessee Titans before I was a fan of my husband. I'm not planning on getting rid of either one of them, but, again, I think it's that loyalty, that connection, a lot of people find their teams when they're kids. And so it reminds you of watching the game with grandpa or, it's such an emotional thing, but I do think there is an unhealthy attachment in some ways. And that's why I think we then develop that perfectionist culture, which then bleeds into athletes, then it bleeds into our mental health. I mean, it's definitely a cycle, but I love the way you compared it to the relationship, right? Like we're new, baby, I'm sorry, let's get started.
Yeah.
They lose a game. You're like, here we go again.
What the heck?
We win a big game and, you buy the present. I mean, it really is. It's such a good example.
Maybe because I, in my job, unfortunately, deal with domestic violence, intimate partner violence on a daily basis, almost. And as I've been a social worker for almost 6 years and doing this, I was like, it's just the parallels.
It's a grief process too, right? You're in denial, and acceptance.
Yes.
You get to week 12 and you're like, my team sucks. I've accepted it. Yeah.
Right? Acceptance.
Then there's that bargaining of like, oh, if they just win this game,
they can get in the playoffs and they can go on a run.
Yeah. And I promise I'll never get this emotional. Next year I'm not gonna watch. It's a grief process. It really is.
Yes, absolutely is. I love looking at Twitter. And I watched the grief process.
Oh, it unfolds on the timeline, bro. Yeah. During the game.
They start off with the just anger and just furious. And then they're like, they're trying to make it make sense. And they're like, I kind of understand because. And then they're just sad. And then it's like, wow, this is sick. We are sick.
And it all, and
Adam's
right, sometimes it's during the game. Like if you follow someone's like Facebook or Twitter and you're like, the game starts, they're amped, they got their beer, they're ready, let's go. Halfway through, they're terrible, I'm not watching them again. They're like, oh shit, we're back in it. I'm like, what is going on?
It's one of the things I promised myself. I don't know if you remember this game. Speaking of the Chiefs game against the Colts in the playoffs. And this is when like Alex Smith was a quarterback and Andrew Luck was a quarterback. It's a playoff game. And the Chiefs went up by a lot, right? Like a shit ton, like just destroying the Colts. And one of the guys I used to follow, he got blocked because he was like a Tyreek Hill like apologist. So I had to block him. But I'll never forget, like, he was on Twitter, like, talking shit and just going off. And Andrew Luck, in probably his best NFL performance, led the Colts on this amazing, amazing comeback. And just how, like, I just remember his tweets after the game. And I was like, and that's why, like, when the Saints play, I just tweet funny shit. Like, that's it.
Right.
But, like, I never go from this level of, like, talking shit, blah, 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 because, I mean, as Saints fans, we should know. Like, we should know better.
Absolutely. We are never out of it or in it until the game is over. Well, my brother, my brother, big Texans fan, obviously Titans fan, we're in the same conference. And
not the Texans Chiefs game.
Yeah, we do not talk to each other. Like, we don't talk shit. We don't do it. It's like, you watch your game, you do your thing, I'm going to do my thing. And that way, like, we're still friends, right? Like, but it's so stupid. Like, I'm talking about my brother and I have to come to, like, a peace treaty to, like,
over a sporting event.
Yeah, like, over the damn football season. But you look at fantasy football, right? Like, same kind of concept, too. I'm really thinking about adding this to my specialty areas, like military, sports, and then, like, sports fanship. I really like this.
I'm telling you.
Lindsay, just give me a cut. That's all. Just give me a small cut.
All right, I'll give you a small cut. You know, the mental health industry is rolling in the dough.
Yeah, so, rolling
in. Yeah, we're just, I mean, it is, the sky's the limit. But it's so true. It's a weird sport. sports and athletics, it's a weird environment.
And it just ties into so much psychology. Like, It's like I was telling Ryan, things like when the Saints would lose, like you said, like you have the Monday blues. It's so funny because like me and Ryan used to talk about that all the time. Like you go into work, go to the office, and me living in California, it's a little different. So I know when Ryan was in New Orleans when the Saints lost, he had to go to work. Like everyone's sad, right? I'm in California.
Everyone's pissed off, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in California. And so like this is the first thing people want to talk to me. Like, oh, man, that was a brutal loss for us. And to the point, like, when games were so, like, when the Saints would lose, I would be, like, annoyed. Like, when I was married in the past, I would be, like, annoyed with, like, my ex-wife. Right. And I would be annoyed with my kid. And, like, just have, like, this bad mood. And it makes no fucking sense why we get that emotional. And that's one of the things that Ryan and I have really preached on this podcast. We tried to tell Saints fans, you have to emotionally disconnect yourself from the team. Still watch the game.
And yeah, have a healthy attachment.
Yeah.
Healthy attachment. I like that.
Yeah. Healthy attachment. We're not saying, like, it doesn't make you a bad fan if you don't feel bad if they lose. Right. Like, you're still a fan.
I'm going to do some serious talk about self-awareness. I'm going to really check myself this football season, and we're going to have to hop on again. I'm like, all right, boys, I'm cured. This is how it went this year. Yeah. I feel good
Wait till AJ Brown and Julio Jones are fucking going off this, and then get back to me.
I'll be like, boys, it's not going well. I need some help. I have a very unhealthy attachment right now. Like,
and you guys play in the AFC South, so like you don't even have a tough division. Like,
and we still struggle. We still struggle, but
I'm just saying. But anything else you have for Dr. Mitchell, Ryan, before we let her go?
Yeah, actually I do. Just a kind of quick segue away from football. Since you said you worked for the military on the suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's such a big issue. And, you know, recently with the events going on in Afghanistan, that war is finally coming to an end. The longest war in U.S. history.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy.
And, it's mind blowing.
And I know plenty of people. I used to work for the Army. I wasn't in the Army, but I worked for the Army. I know plenty of people that served there, and you know, former veterans. And a lot of them are, you know, and I've been reading, just having a tough time dealing with it, because when you think about it, the U.S. hasn't had that war where there's that welcome home moment like you had in World War II, where you have the parade and everybody's like, welcome home, boys. That hadn't happened in decades. Like, these things have been disasters for the most part. And I just can't imagine what that's doing for them mentally. They already ranked the highest among suicides.
Right. And what we're seeing in current veterans is very similar to what we saw in Vietnam veterans, because Vietnam veterans got a very unhappy welcome home. And so they had a lot of damage for that. And so we're actually seeing that trend spinning back around because we've been, you know, in the war for so long. You'll also get guys that got out that feel guilty that they got out, you know, what do I do with that? You also have the youngest veterans that are coming back, where they had the longest tours in this war. They had the most back to back. So there used to have to be a 16-month period before you could go back. And it changed to 8 months. So you've got more tours, shorter amount of recovery time, and younger people. So their brain's not even fully developed. They're not even completely sure of who they are, you know, and they're coming back. And because it's been going on so long, we don't have a lot of resources. So
some weren't even alive when the war started.
Nope. Isn't that crazy?
That's
absolutely wild.
And so really figuring out, you know, how do we help, you know, at the recovery process too? And what do we do kind of with these very young? So you're just getting the youngest back. And like when I said I worked with veterans, people immediately think old people. And I'm like, most of these men and women are younger than me.
Yeah.
And so it, and the suicide rate, it's gone up. It's, I think, 15% higher the last time I checked a couple months ago. And it's just, and again, I think we got to look at the the human spirit and whether you agree with the war, don't agree with the war, the politic piece of it, you know, these are human beings and we got to figure out how to wrap each other in kindness. And I think, you know, that's a theme with everything that we've talked about tonight is figuring out how to do that in a world that's giving us, you know, so much hate across the board and impacting everybody so differently and just and trying to find a way to wrap each other in kindness, I think is something that we can all relate to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that so beautifully said.
Absolutely. Well, you guys were bringing it out in me. I've now had this aha moment that I need to be a better sports fan, which is going to make me a better partner. Yeah, I really appreciate you guys. Can I pay you for this?
I do okay with my little bachelor's. I do all right.
Hey, you know what? Some of the best therapists that I have gone to have master's degrees, bachelor degrees. You meet the right person that can speak your language, and healing comes in all shapes and sizes. So
we should definitely at some point during the season have another episode. We'll check in with you with your Titans fandom. See how that's going.
Make sure I put my money where my mouth is.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like,
You'll hold me accountable, like, gentlemen.
If Ryan Tannehill, like, starts and he's, like, has 20 touchdowns and 5 interceptions, like, we're going to know what the deal is. Like,
you guys are going to, like, follow my Instagram and be like, she was so full of shit. Look at her bragging about this.
Yo, when we were recording, I did follow the pay group on Instagram, so.
Oh, I'm screwed now. I'm screwed.
For sure, Keith.
Dang it. All right, I got to go to my other account. I'm going to be like that lesson that has a secret account.
Oh, you'll pull the burner? Burnout. Yeah, we should talk about that on another episode.
Well, gentlemen, I have had so much fun. You guys have really made my mind, and that's what I love talking about this stuff and psychology and sports and community because it makes my mind. I'm thinking about people that I'm seeing tomorrow that I can connect with some of the stuff we talked about. So I really appreciate the conversation.
Well, we appreciate having you on. We're so glad that we're finally able to do this. Please, if you're in the Texas area, even not in the Texas area, go to thepavegroup.com. You can follow Dr. Mitchell on Instagram at thepavegroup. This was a pleasure. I'm so glad we finally got to do this.
And Adam, on a serious note, I'm sending so many blessings towards your family. And if you guys ever need anything, you've got a therapist that is always willing to listen. And I truly mean that. So I'm sending so much healing your way.
Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it. It's good to see it, you know, so much good that's still in this world. Obviously, my job deals with a lot of shitty and a lot of bad. And so, you know, I see a lot of bad, but it's been very refreshing these last couple of days to see how much good they're
Well, I hope it keeps coming your way. And if you ever forget, you know where to find me.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Dr. Mitchell.
Yeah, y'all have a great weekend.
You too. We're going to get out of here. We're out.
Thank you.